ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 127 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This time, you're going to really enjoy an interview I had with Royden Lepp, creator of one of my favorite books that's out right now, which is called Rust. We're going to talk about the third volume that's coming out very soon, and you're going to find out a lot more about the series and what we can look forward to. Since that's such a great interview, let's get right to it. I want to welcome back to the podcast Royden Lepp, creator of one of my very favorite books that's coming out right now called Rust. And how are you doing today, Royden?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Wayne.
Well, it's good to talk with you again. I understand there's been a big change in your life since the last time you and I talked.
Yeah, a huge change. Everyone told me it would be, life-changing, but it's pretty hard to – I mean, that's a huge understatement. I had a baby. Well, my wife had a baby.
Well, you had something to do with it.
So. Yeah. No, it's been a roller coaster.
Is it a boy or girl?
It's a boy. His name is Edison.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
very cool. So, how old is Edison at this point?
He's just over 4 months old.
Wow. Yeah, that is a big change.
Yeah. It was funny because Rust Volume 3 was due. About the same day as Edison's due date. And I was like, oh my gosh, is this really going to happen? I'm like rushing to finish the book to get it off to the printer. And then my wife was early. So I was like, Okay, well, we're going to put that on hold for a couple weeks.
Well, real life gets in the way of comics sometimes. I'm not surprised, but the last time you and I talked, we had we talked about, and I think two had come out recently, and so now this is issue three is coming out in May. Do we have a specific date, or just it'll come sometime in May?
I believe it's May 7th. That's the date that I read on the internet.
Oh, good. Okay. So that'll be good, right towards the beginning of the month. Good reading. Now, I had a chance to read it, and I have to say how great it is. Just like the other two books, this one is right up there with it. In fact, in issue three, or book three, I guess we should call it, because it comes out in hardcover, you're kind of aiming towards the last book. There's a lot of setup for what's going to happen in the fourth book, which I understand is the final one, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, boy, what a good book that is. I enjoyed it so much. And we talked a little bit about this in the past, and I want to talk about some of it again, because you do Rust in a style that's very different from what I see in most comics. You know, the duotones and things like that. And one of the things when I read the third book, which people will get to read at the beginning of May, I was just so impressed about how you use silence as an effective tool, especially like when Jet, who is the robot boy, when he doesn't say anything, he's actually saying things, mm-hmm. which I really loved about that because, you know, my understanding is that you have a background in video games, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And a lot of video games depend on a lot of active stuff going on so that you don't get distracted. So I was very impressed with how you use silence in this book. It was excellent. I really liked that because when somebody says something to him, oftentimes he doesn't respond. And when he doesn't respond, the way that you draw it communicates things through it. So I thought that was wonderful.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, that's one of the things that's so fun to do about the book. And it's one of the great treats that I have as a artist/writer in that I get to tell the story with the pictures, and not to say that writers wouldn't do that, but they're not always thinking strictly about the pictures, and I love to be able to tell a story with just the images alone, and it's a challenge for me as an artist to say, can I pull this off by using, you know, my knowledge of poses and expression and body language to communicate what it is that the character's saying, even though nothing is written on the page. It's a fun challenge for me, and so it's good to know that it pays off when the reader gets it.
It's so great. I mean, Jet, now the title of this book is actually called Death of the Rocket Boy, isn't it?
That's correct, yeah.
Wow.
A little ominous.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Because, you know, this is a very serious set of books on one level, but it's also very human and very, very living, the way that things are going. We actually, in this book, we find out a lot more about Jet's past.
Yeah, it's been fun to kind of finally get into his history. And I know that a lot of answers or questions are going to be answered in Volume 3, but I also know there's still a lot of questions that aren't going to get answered. And as you know well, I like piecing out the mystery, but it is fun to kind of start to, you know, I think Book 2 started it too, but Book 3 we're really starting to say, oh, wow, okay, this is what happened. We're getting a clear picture of Jet's past.
There's something in the book, and I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say what's the name of the farmer? I forget his name off the top of my head.
Roman Taylor.
Roman, that's right, Roman. When Roman is trying to take these robots and use them for his own, you know, for his farm and things like that, and so there's a section in which one of the robots is kind of chasing after the chickens and eggs and stuff, and I literally sat there going, oh, no, don't let him go after the chickens. You know, and there's a good reason for that, as we come to find out, that these robots are not necessarily reprogrammable, you know, completely. So I really thought that was an amazingly tense sequence. And I was literally just, you know, one eye open looking at that going, oh, no, don't let them do it.
That's
don't
great.
Let them do it.
That's great. That was probably one of my favorite scenes in the whole series. I had always looked forward to drawing that after I'd kind of come up with the idea. And it's just a great moment of terror amongst this kind of moment where they're trying to have fun and be funny, and they're, you know, finally laughing and with Acott and Ava there, and it doesn't go well.
No, that's kind of understatement. But now it's Ava that's blind in the family, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And she's out there thinking this is all great fun because people are laughing, but it actually works out that it's better that she's blind and doesn't see exactly what happened. So I kind of thought that was, that was a real turning point in the book.
Yeah, that's what's fun about the character Ava, too, is that pathos that you get to put in, especially to a character that's blind, where you know, you have sympathy towards her, but then in this situation, you're like, oh, thank goodness she didn't see that. You know, it's...
Yeah. Oh, well, now with a kid, you can start to really relate to these kinds of things, you know?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
But it was such a well-done sequence, and I just, you know, the greatest thing about it was I had to keep going because I wanted to see what was going on, but I was horrified. It's like, you know, sometimes like a train wreck, you know, you can't take your eyes off of it. On the other hand, holy smoke, that was just an amazing thing to watch. And that's kind of what happens in this sequence. It was a very interesting thing. I really liked it. Now, one of the characters that I also liked, too, was the creator of Jet. Mm-hmm. You know, he's kind of an interesting – he's come a long way since Jet was made. And he's actually kind of you know, he's got a great big beard now, or he didn't have that before. And he's trying to – actually interact with Jet, where we discover that he's got a lot of – he was created in a way to be an independent thinker, which is very unusual for a machine.
Yeah. There are these two kinds of machines, obviously, in this world, and one of them is the Model Cs on the farm, and then the larger machines that we see in the war and that in Volume 1, and then there's Jet. And so I had to make that, you know, distinction between the two. Why would these two different entities be engineered? And I mean, it's clear with Jet, he's thinking, and as we're beginning to see, he's feeling, and that's always the great plot of any robot story. Really, is the robot's beginning to think and feel for itself. That's been fun ideas and even kind of philosophies to play with as you kind of caught wind of it at the beginning of the story about responsibility and about, choice and freedom, all those good things.
Mm-hmm. I really did like that because you find his creator arguing with him. He doesn't want to be who he is at this point. He wants to go back and be more of a machine and less, you know, human in that respect. And it's the creator who has to talk with him and talk him down from that, which I thought was an amazing thing. It's, you know, when you have to sit there and tell a machine, don't be so machine-like. That is an amazing thing because it gives you, you know, one of the things about a whole series of books that's really gotten me was the sympathy I feel for Jet. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still, he looks like a child, and he basically in many ways functions like a child.
Yeah, what's interesting is Jet's kind of being lazy, which is a very complex thing to be dealing with as a robot. But he's lazy and saying, I don't want to carry this responsibility anymore. I would rather just be programmed to do the right thing all the time. And I think that kind of attitude, I just, you know, I kind of dug within my own thoughts and be like, that would really be the easiest life to live is just, oh, it's just ones and zeros. I always make the right choice all the time. Instead, you know, as humans, we're faced with these difficult decisions all the time, and it's almost a lazy attitude to say, I don't want to have to deal with life anymore. I just want to be programmed what to do, you know, and that's the choices that Jet faces.
See, the thing that gets me about this, though, is this is kind of what children, when they're growing up, they have to face, is that there are responsibilities or reactions that come from what they've done. And a lot of kids don't like to face that kind of thing, the consequences.
Right.
And so on a level, he's actually functioning very much like a human.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I didn't think of it that way.
I liked it so much, and I was sitting there going, like, wow, man, poor old Jet is really struggling along here, and he's literally growing up in front of us, and I just think that's the greatest thing. So, well, why don't we backtrack a little bit and talk about how the series came to be in case somebody hasn't had a chance to read them before.
Sure.
Where did the idea for Rust come from?
You know, it kind of evolved. It's not like it hit me suddenly. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to do this new book series with the publisher, and it started really from sketches. You know, most of my ideas come from imagery and then stitching images together to try to wrap a story around it, because I'm drawn by imagery especially when I pick up a comic. I want to see an image that says to me, well, that's interesting. I want to hear the story behind that. So for me, it always starts as sketches. So I did a lot of sketches of, you know, a kid with a jetpack in this kind of, you know, 1930s, 1940s era. And then I grew up on a farm in Manitoba, Canada. And the idea of writing what you know and also putting these, you know, the science fiction kind of story in to this prairie land setting was interesting to me. And so I just went from there, and then I began to kind of craft the story of Jet Jones. And once I realized that he was going to be a fairly stoic character, and I realized, you know, who he was and what kind of character he was, I realized he wasn't going to speak very much, and we needed to see him through the eyes of somebody else. And slowly all these things kind of came together in my head of the Taylor family, and it became a great way for me to kind of express parts of my childhood and also, you know, play around with these great, you know, science fiction themes of robots and, you know, big battles and stuff like that, and motorcycles. It was just, I wanted to create a playground for myself to play in, and that's what I did, and that's why I haven't gotten tired of the series at all. It's been really fun.
Because, you know, it's interesting to me because you have robots on the one side and then you have motorcycles on the other. you know, you've got these kind of very different levels of technology, you know, and they sort of smash together on this farm. And I really enjoy the way that you're doing that and making Jet, you know, Jet is you know, he's such an interesting character, and the whole idea of jetpacks, while they're trying desperately to make robot workers on the farm, you know, it's the expectation of what technology is going to do is very different for everybody within the series.
Yeah, there's obviously this incredibly advanced technology of Jet Jones, and then there's these robots, which I designed to feel like they were built out of tractor parts. You know, I wanted this really, really, you know, kind of primary structure. And and those things fight each other a little bit, but it's kind of fun. I wanted to create a robot that you could look at and say, oh, I could kind of picture that walking around 1930s. You can hear the squeaking springs, and it's got exhaust, and it's running on fuel. All that stuff that's kind of cool. But at the same time, I don't want to do things like reinvent a motorcycle. I think that once you are in the setting and you see things familiar, like a motorcycle or a truck, then you're grounded and you kind of have a feeling of place and like a sensibility of where you are in the setting. It's the robots that are new, and you put them next to the motorcycle and you say, hey, these things live in the same world, and then that creates believability, I think, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, my family used to have a trailer up in the around a lake, and when we were left from next to a city, we went up to there. It was a very different perspective on life, not only just the choice of technology and stuff, but they didn't understand city life any more than city life understood their life.
Right.
So it's just the interesting thing is this is taking place on a farm like that, and to actually go back and see more about Jet's creation and all the things that were going on. I like the way that the contrast is set up and the way that there are varying views as to what's going to happen or what should happen even.
Yeah, no, it's in a really fun world to play in, and the great thing is that I haven't revealed all of it yet. So, some of it I have in my head, but other parts I don't. So it kind of really leaves me opportunity, if I wanted to later, to go and explore the world and say, well, what does the city look like, and can we know more about the war or the military? All that kind of stuff is still a big wide world out there that I'm not focusing on in the story of Rust. So there's still lots of stories left to tell.
One of the things we talked about last time, I think it bears repeating, is how the book got to be called Rust.
I don't remember the details of the story. Can you refresh my mind?
Well, the story was you had a different name, I think, or you weren't sure what the title should be. And then it was the company or the editor that came back and said, you should call this Rust.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I had forgotten how many people I tell that story to. But I think it was originally called Jet Jones. I was fairly comfortable with that name of the character, and it was unique enough that I thought it should be the title. In retrospect, I sure am glad that Archaea suggested Rust. It's kind of the embodiment of the mood and the theme and the texture of the story in so many ways that it makes the most sense. And it seemed to have stuck. It's not as simple a title as it is. It doesn't get lost, and sometimes the really simple titles kind of get lost in the rest of the stories out there. But it's been a great thing. Yeah, I'm happy with it.
Yeah, well, as I remember, you showed it to other people, and other people came back and said, yeah, we like that title. That's a good title.
Yeah, that's right. That's the part I forgot, that it was like, when Archaea said, we're thinking of calling it Rust instead of Jet Jones, I was like, yeah, that kind of fits. And then I go to some colleagues and friends that I trusted and say, so Archaea's thinking of renaming it Rust. And they would all kind of like have that pause and like, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what it should be.
Yeah, that's good stuff, because the book has one of the things I enjoy too about it's got a hardcover, and on the cover the word Rust will have what looks like rust in the golden part of it, and so it doesn't look like it's not completely gold. You've got parts that look like rust have taken pieces of it away, which I thought is a great design element for that.
Yeah, it almost feels like the book is maybe secondhand or something like that, but it's not. Don't worry. The title is that's part of the title. It just kind of speaks to the theme and of degradation, and it's cool.
Well, also the inside, when you use like the duotones, you're using sort of a yellow, brownish, and black.
Yeah,
which is unusual.
It's actually really true sepia tone. I actually don't know the printing process if they're using a three color process, but it's kind of reds and yellows. Obviously, being able to go all the way to black, but it fits the theme, and it was one of those things that originally talking to Archaea, I had the idea of wanting to do it in sepia, but I knew that it could cost as much as color in printing, right. but doesn't give you, you know, doesn't always get listed as full color. Mm-hmm. So it was when Mark Smiley at RKS said, yeah, we're thinking of calling it Rust, and we're also thinking of doing it in sepia. And I was like, oh, yes, that's okay. We're thinking the same things now. You know, like that,
great.
That was a deal maker, so...
You know, that's great, because a lot of times, especially when you're getting books printed and you've got an idea that doesn't quite fit the current mold, a lot of times people say, no, no, we can't do that. We need full color. We need this, that, and the other, because somehow, I guess since they're printing, they think that they know better what the story is you're trying to tell.
Yeah, I never knew how much sepia would affect the mood of the story. Like, it really, really sings off the pages, you know. Like, yeah, it's always been a really great element of the book, and I understand that the bean counters are going to be saying, "Hey, we're paying for color, but we're not getting color." But I've got the opposite response from readers, just saying it's their favorite thing about the book is that it's got this like warm glow.
Mm-hmm. And not only that too is you give the characters as you draw them a very human feel. You know, they look like people, you know, because sometimes you get the comics and, you know, people are very muscular and bigger. I wonder how their bodies can move with muscles like that, you know. But you treat them all like very human beings, and I like that. And, you know, the characters all behave like human beings, too. You know, Roman's got a girl that he wishes would stay on the farm, and they have a long discussion about that. I really like that conversation quite a lot. That was actually very human. Of that.
Yeah.
And a contrast to Jet, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That was another scene that I was looking forward to for a long time, and excited to have people read it. It's you know, this kind of conversation that a lot of people could probably relate with when you get time alone with that girl that you want to talk to. Mm-hmm. And I'd be lying if I said, you know, I didn't have parts of that conversation with girls at one point in my life. Yeah, that was really fun, and kind of the juxtaposition of where the conversation goes, you know, while they're sitting in front of this beautiful sunset. That was really just a really fun setting, fun place for me to tell a story.
Mm-hmm. Also the children are very childlike too, because I think we may have discussed this before, but the thing that I like about them is, you know, there's a part at which Jet kind of has to tell them that he's not going to stay there forever. And their reaction is very childlike. I really like that they behave like human beings. I don't want to spoil it either. It's kind of a neat little thing. But it just kind of, he's touched by their response.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, this is that use of silence again. He's very quiet when they say things that he doesn't expect them to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was the thing is that some comics depend on action to the point that you don't get much drama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get lots and lots and lots of action and punching and jumping and things. But the nice thing about Rust is that it has this excellent balance between, I mean, you've got robot on robot action sometimes, you've got personal stuff going on, and it's just nice. It all blends together so nicely, you know. I do like the fact that the dialogue is kind of kept to a minimum, and every word feels like it's being counted and it means something. So I like that, as well as the fact that the action and stuff is drawn, because I think you do both of those very well. And, you know, as far as writing goes, I think that you balance both of those things very well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Those are high compliments. It's again, it's the way I love telling a story. It's the way I want to read it. There's a great risk in not putting text in a panel, and that's that people will just breeze past that panel because they take it in with their eyes and they say, okay, I've read it. I know what's going on in the panel, and they move to the next one. If there's no text in there, they move on really quick, and pretty soon they're just plowing through the pages. And it's okay to read it like that, especially if you enjoy it. But, you know, I would like the reader to just hang out for, you know, that extra fraction of a second to fully take in everything in each panel. And that doesn't always happen. But yeah, as, you know, as a writer and artist, it's just the greatest way to tell a story. I have to give credit to my editor at Arkea, Rebecca Taylor, because, you know, when you compliment me on my writing, you know, I will send drafts, and she's very good at saying, hey, this isn't good enough yet. or what you are trying to, you know, bring across from this character is not being communicated yet. You need another pass. And she's really good at, you know, telling me when we've arrived and when we haven't, when the book is finished and when it's not. And sometimes it's really frustrating. I'm like, I don't know what else, like, I don't know how else to say it or whatever. And she just says, just do it again. Just do it again. It's not there yet. And that's what a good editor is, somebody that just says, it's not done yet. The book's not done yet. Keep working, you know.
I know that's hard because you kind of hope you get it done.
Yeah.
You know, you've got plenty of other things to do. And it's kind of hard when you think, okay, I've got it this time. I really got to come back and say no. Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're really, really close and it's, you know, you're just looking forward to them just uploading it to the printer. You just want it to be done. And, you know, and only to realize, you know, she's probably right. We should probably add, you know, 2 more pages in this scene or whatever. That kind of stuff is, you know, that's really valuable. That's the best kind of editor there is.
Well, one of the things that I do sometimes, if somebody wants, you know, my opinion on something, I'll read something for them and I'll say, I had a friend of mine who wrote a Star Trek Deep Space Nine script. Mm-hmm. And I was going through it, and there was this one, I mean, it was so obvious to me. There was this huge dangling thread when I got done reading it, and I called him up, and I said, look, I said, you've got everything good except for this dangling thread is driving me crazy. And I told him exactly how to resolve it. There's one line of dialogue could have resolved the whole thing. And, you know, that's the kind of thing I think that somebody who may not necessarily understand the whole, you know, how the project's going to finish, might actually look at it and go, oh, you know, we need that would be a big benefit for that. And, you know, he thanked me for that because he hadn't considered that. Mm-hmm. So I just think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's really hard for an editor to not say, you should do it like this, or this is what I would do, you know. Mm-hmm. It's hard for them just to say, you're not done yet. And this is why, and that's what Rebecca does for me, and so she's been really instrumental in the book being as good as it can be.
Well, I'm sure they'd like to get it done soon too.
Yeah,
they want to make money off of it too.
Yeah, yeah.
Show business, after all. So, but yeah, I just think that now I do have to ask, because the first book I think was colored red, and the second book was colored blue on the cover. What's the third cover? Because I didn't see the cover.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, the third one is green.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, it's a nice kind of a. Earth
primary color thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the big question is what's the fourth one going to be?
Yeah. Now, the first thing that popped into my head when I watched. But, well, you know, that I'll wait and be surprised. I'm happy to be surprised a lot of times with good things.
Yes.
I don't like to be spoiled too much.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm trying really hard not to give away the details, because this book, I think, is one of those books that I think really all ages could sit down and probably enjoy. You know, might be startled at a couple of things. But I have to say, I think that, you know, kids probably could get a lot of good things out of this, and also adults, because I'm just gripped by it. I'm so happy to be able to get out. And even though I've seen a PDF of it, I'm dying to have the hardcover to put with the other two. Oh, man, I can't wait for that to come out.
Great, great. Yeah.
Right after it, put them all together, and one day I'm going to sit and read the whole thing from start to finish. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, yeah. It's But yeah, it's been a great feeling putting that third book on my shelf as well. But yeah, that's the greatest compliment that I get from people, is that this is true, you know, kind of quote unquote true all ages. All ages often means it's a kid's book when it's, you know, no one wants to say, oh, this is a kid's book. So they just say, well, it's all ages. It means it's good for everybody. But I have a lot of Rust fans that don't know that Rust is all ages. They don't know that young kids really enjoy it. And I think that's kind of cool. The kids are enjoying it, but there's also adults that are enjoying it, and they don't realize that it's perfectly, you know, it's a great story for kids as well. So to me, that's a great compliment.
Well, in my mind, the best stories are not age specific.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you're telling a story that applies to really everybody, you know, that to me is the best kind. You know, you've got very age-specific stuff. I have friends of mine. I always complain bitterly about animated shows, that they're too dumb.
Yeah.
You know, and all my friends keep telling me, well, it wasn't written for you. Well, yeah, but I mean, if I find it dumb. If I had like children and I didn't want them to be exposed to dumb things, I wouldn't want them to watch it. So I think the best kind of stories are those that, you know, especially animation and things like that. Of course, you and video games probably can relate to all this kind of stuff. It's better if you can attract more than just like an age specific audience, because, you know, let's face it, you're going to make more money if you can draw in more people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very true. Of even the most popular entertainment IP out there, TV shows and whatever, that, you know, the ones that parents catch a glimpse of and they're like, "Oh, this is actually pretty good." Those become really broad, you know, broad shows.
Now I got to ask you, and I always have this in the back of my mind when I read Rust: is there any possibility after the fourth book gets done that this could be like an animated movie of some sort?
So it was optioned by 20th Century Fox.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah. So there is. There remains to be a great possibility.
Oh, good.
And you see it on the big screen. However, it was the live action option that was animated. Well, it was a motion picture that was animated, but that was optioned. But it's the live action movie that they want to tell. So, which I think is really exciting. I think it'd be really cool to see it in live action up on the screen. So then it could. You know, it could go to animation as well, but you know, as things in Hollywood go, it could happen. It could not. But for right now, there's a lot of people in Hollywood that they're still really excited about turning this into a movie.
Well, see, one of the things about comics is that you are basically showing a company how you could make this movie. I mean, you've written the panels and perspectives and stuff like that. I mean, just talk to Frank Miller about that. He makes his movies based on his comics. You know, they're flat out that way.
I know, yeah, and I found that too. That's what's frustrating for me is the way that I want to tell a story, and it's best for me to kind of take the reins and show people what I want to do. And that's the great thing about comics is one person can sit down and do them. Sometimes, you know, need more than one, but you can actually show people exactly what you had in mind, and that's why comics and graphic novels are optioned so often, because you just flip it open and you can see the vision and the story right there, and that helps the leap that executives have to make when they're just reading a script or a treatment.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they could film it in sepia tone. You know, there's no reason why they have to use full color.
I think that'd be cool. Yeah, I'd love that.
You know, that would be something interesting. Now, of course, the bad news about being optioned is that if some producer gets a hold of it and they decide, well, it'd be good if we could just, let's say we made, Jet a Girl, and let's say we, and switch this and switch that, and then you kind of look at, and when you get to sit down and look at the movie, you go, what happened to my story?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's always the danger.
Yeah, and I understand why that happens a little, even more than I used to, but I've always understood that, you know, this book series, if it just went straight up onto the screen, for one thing, it'd probably be too long, and it may not, you know, reach the widest audience possible. Film is just a different format, it's a different platform, and everything needs to be altered a little bit. And on top of that, when somebody gets excited about your property, like when a screenwriter says, "I love your book, I want to write the script," mm-hmm. It's really important for them to take some kind of ownership over the story and make it be something that they care about instead of a direct, super 100%, you know, accurate adaptation of my story. Mm-hmm. Because that's the way it's going to be good, is if they care about it, if they really love the story and they kind of get to put themselves into it a little bit. And then it's, you know, that's kind of how I feel. But, But yeah, I mean, it would be sad if Jet turned into a girl.
Yeah. Well, I just hope they don't brutalize the story, you know, because there's a reason why it's a good story, because it's a good story. And, you know, to taint and fracture the whole thing. And I've seen many things where times when people just look up at their story and go like, what happened? And, you know, I don't think that's a good thing, because, you know, if it works, it works.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the other way around, too, sometimes you watch a movie and then you go read the book and it's like, oh, my goodness, the producer pulled that one out of the garbage, you know, like it's or out of the nosedive, like it not that it was a bad story, but you know, sometimes things kind of become redeemed by the film format. But you know, the audience for Rust graphic novel is growing. I hope that, you know, if the movie gets made, everyone's happy with it, including me. But but you know, I'm not a movie maker, and not at this point. Mm-hmm. I'm a comic book maker. So
yeah, but you're a video game maker too. So you have you understand what goes on the screen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my background is in I went to film school, so I think that's why Rust looks cinematic at all is that it's kind of more storyboards even than it is comics, and that also helped sell the option as well, I think. So yeah, I mean, it'll be fun. There's nothing like watching somebody else interpret your work, so it's been an exciting time.
That must be gratifying for you as a writer, though, to have people responding like they are to Rust.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's good, but I try to keep my head on the ground, and I always try to tell myself that every convention I go to and I sit at the table, there's that one person that comes up that just says, "Hey, I just want to say," they don't get a signature, they don't ask for a sketch or anything, they just say, "Hey, I just want to say I read Rust and I really liked it. Thanks for making that," and they walk away. And that's kind of how I respond to good stories. I don't always engage very well with other creators, and when that one person comes by and says, "Hey, thanks for making that book," I think to myself, that's the person I wrote it for, and I'm happy that they liked it. And if it's just them, then that needs to be enough, because if I always want, more fans and more fans, there's never enough fans. So you just have to be happy with the ones that, that one person that says, "Thank you for writing this story." So, so that's kind of how I try to keep focused.
Very cool stuff, because I'm not an autograph person myself. I'm okay with sketches, but I would much rather have the book than have the sketches of that. So for me, I often go up to people and I just shake their hand. They don't understand, "Aren't you going to buy a sketch?" No. I'm happy just to say what a great story.
I know. I feel bad because they want to make money and sell a sketch, but that's how I interact with other creators too. I just like to say, "Hey, thanks for making that thing. It was really entertaining. I really enjoyed it. And please make more."
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. It was the old Lay's potato chips. We like this, but we'll make more.
Yeah,
kind of stuff. So that's good. Now, of course, the pressure's on. Now you've got a four book story you're going to do, and the fourth issue is, or the book is going to conclude everything, or quote unquote conclude everything. I'm sure you'll leave some things open. I the best stories to me don't wrap every detail up. They leave openings for other possible things to happen afterwards. I don't want you to give anything away, but based on your writing so far, I've got a feeling that you've got a satisfying ending in mind.
I hope so. I don't want to leave people hanging. I know that I have a tendency to do that. Some people are not happy with the cliffhangers that I leave them with, but I like stories like that. The fourth book, I've always said from the beginning, is the end of this story, and that means it needs to tie up and be satisfying to the reader. With that said, I have also said from the beginning that I just said it earlier, there are lots of questions I'm not going to answer. Mm-hmm. And to me, that makes the world more interesting. Instead of those movies that open up and say in the year such and such, this happened and then that happened and now people are doing this, and it kind of just lays everything out and it's like, okay, this is different. This is just about the family. This is about the Taylors, and it's about Jet Jones. And so things that don't go outside of that most likely won't get, well, even some details about the Taylors probably won't get answered. But maybe later. Mm-hmm. I don't have any big plans right now, but like I say, I want to leave the world open. But I want to tell a great ending to this story, and I'm very excited about the fourth book. It's going to be a huge ending.
Oh, good. See, I'm so looking forward to that now. I've read the third one, and I highly recommend to anybody listening to be sure to get out there and get that third book. And if you haven't gotten the one and two, be sure to get those too, because it's just a great story, and you're going to be engrossed by it, and you're going to be glad you got them. Do you have any idea at this point, and no pressure here, as to when the fourth book might show up?
No, Wayne, no. If there's one thing I learned about this book series, do not talk about when you think the book is going to come out, because even when some of the books in this series have been off to the printer and I've said to people, absolutely, it's going to be here by Christmas, or for sure you'll be able to grab it in San Diego or in Seattle next year. And then that doesn't happen. And it's just because there are so many parts of this process that are not in my control. Most of it is, obviously. But book four is pretty large. There's lots of story to tell. And I have a baby at home now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask for a little bit of grace from fans and readers as I navigate my new schedule. Mm-hmm. But, I'm going to try to get it out in 2015. How does that sound?
Okay, well, that's good. That's a good thing, you know. And again, Rust is well worth the wait. I would much rather come out and be really good than come out too soon.
Yeah.
So for me, all three books have just been, well worth the wait. And I never forget when I picked up the first one and I said, what is this crazy book? It's not even color. What's going on? And so I started to, and I just, it's one of those books that just pulls you in and you forget where you are. You forget how long you've been reading it. It's just you're so engrossed in what's happening. That is just that's the best kind of storytelling to me. I highly recommend, if anybody has not got them, to please get out there and be sure you get Rust, because it is just, and May 7, get book 3 if you've got the others. Just be there on that day to make sure you get it, because it's just such a great book.
Thank you, Wayne. Those are the things those are the experiences I'm writing this story for. So thank you for sharing that with the audience.
Okay, now, have you got any other projects you'd like us to be aware of?
No, I really am dedicating all my time to Rust. And by all my time, I mean all my time outside of my day job. So I do still work a full-time job. So Rust is my number one focus. I've definitely, had a lot of people asking what's next. But really, honestly, what's next is probably several years away. So there's no use in talking about it at this point.
Okay. Well, with Rust, you build up a lot of capital with us, so we'll patiently wait until that kind of thing hits the ground. So that's it.
Cool. Yeah, I think my next book, if I do one, is not going to be four volumes. I can tell you that.
Well, we've got lots to look forward to. And, again, congratulations on Edison and, your expanded family now. And I again say Rust, May 7th, Volume 3, The Death of the Rocket Boy. I highly recommend you get out there and get that book.
Okay.
So,
thank you so much, Wayne. I appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com.
That's it for this week. Be back next time when I'll have a fun interview with Joey Esposito, one of the creators of Captain Ultimate, who's got a new book out called Pawn Shop that I really enjoyed and I think you're going to learn about. But until then, keep reading your comics.